The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
When you go shower in the river, because then in the village you used to shower in the river, and you'd have kids make fun of having lost your mom, you don't have any parent. And you see those early days when you lose both parents, you just know you're either going to become a street kid or you're going to be harassed by your stepmom. Some of them are total orphans like myself, and maybe they've given up. Then I tell them, you know, when I was 8 years, I had no parents. And at that point, by the literally when the news of my mother's death was relayed to me in a very, very funny way. Coming to think of it, that's today is when I'm thinking. They just came in primary school in class. And then they're like, Martin. And my small brother is called George. And they just said, I don't know why. This one just came back to me lately. And I remembered exactly what they said. Kuna wageni nyumbani. So like they're visitors at home. Then when you go home, we arrive there, they're like, your mom has passed on. But then I was 8 years old. You know, 8 years old, when you see your aunties, your everyone, you're just like, oh, visitors are there. I knew she has passed on, but it didn't hit me that hard. And it came to affect me later in campus. So I had my very low moments. I would go to church just at night when the church is dark and just kneel and cry, because I didn't cry when I was supposed to cry. I literally didn't cry when my mom passed. I just cried like later when I was in campus. So still, people talk about their parents, and you see, when guys are talking about those stories, they're never even considerate knowing about everybody's status, because it's high school. They're boys. They're just like, hey, my dad, my mom, or whatever. So for me, I'll just also just tell them stories, because it's just traumatizing to just go and start talking about my mom died and everything. I just tell them stories, and that I felt like that holding back had a very big impact. I still have a lot of issues up to today which I have to deal with, because then they're my ghosts. I must like sort them out. I would say them. I wouldn't freely talk about my parents' death, because I didn't have any. So people would have like these great stories about their dad. There was a time when I was undergoing a lot of issues in my adolescence. And that time I just wished, oh my God, I wish I had a dad to talk to. Yeah, I know like there are these male uncles and everything that are there for you, but then you just want a dad. You don't want an uncle, or you don't want a male teacher. You just want a dad, because everybody is talking about their dad. And that was like, there's still moments like that when I just wish I could just have a dad and tell them, hey, my PhD is just too tough on me. I want to quit, or I want to, you know, I want to take a break. And then they tell me, no, Martin, keep it, keep going, keep working. Uh-huh. And I'll be like, yes, dad.
It's your boy, Billy, back at it with another episode. Hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe amidst the pandemic, and things are going well on your side as they are on mine. And my guest today is Martin Wafula, doing his DPhil, which has insisted it's only in the University of Oxford that they call it DPhil, but otherwise known as a PhD or Doctor of Philosophy in other universities, studying engineering science, and has worked previously at PwC and Safaricom PLC, and even at the Communications Authority of Kenya, and has been previously involved in boy child empowerment and peer mentorship since undergrad, and wants to insist again that he went to St. Joseph's Boys High School, and he said it's a national school, if you were in doubt. So in this particular episode, we'll discuss many things from... Martin, so may insist.
I'm a humble man. Why are you making me look very not humble.
But we'll discuss things from his primary life going into high school and to uni, and some of the biggest achievements he's gotten, some of the things he's experienced in life that can probably help a lot of you out there. And also for him getting the Rhodes Scholarship, which is one of the most prestigious scholarships, that he said that nikendelea hivi pia mitapata. So you guys don't keep me accountable. But yes.
Okay. Yeah, mine is like a bittersweet story, because my childhood also has a lot to do with what I've become or about myself right now, because it just goes back then in the day. I was a mama's kid, because then my dad passed on when I was 2 years old. So I don't know much about my dad, only from stories and pictures. Then from 1996, stayed with my mom, who passed on in 2002. So I was also 8 years old. And at 8 years old, I was a total orphan. So I didn't have biological mother. I didn't have biological father. And then my father was polygamous. So at that point, for some time, we had an aunt, like my mom's sister, who was also there for us, and my dad's first wife, who's become a mother to me. Like, she's more than a mother. She was just the best thing to have happened in my life. So she took care of us. But then when your mother dies, or passes on, the most immediate person you start thinking about is her sisters, the aunts. So that was one of my aunt was very close to my mom, and she was also like they were very close sisters, and so for her, she was also part of our life, and happened to also pass on like a few months later after my mom passes on. So it was a very very sad story. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting thing that I think, or one of the most interesting decisions my mom took when she was alive, was to take me to the school that I did my primary school, because I was in a public school. I started my education in a public school called Kinyoro Primary School, where from a public school system, you just know how it was compared to private school system. So I was there.
Some of our listeners don't know how it was, so you might feel free to explain to us how it was.
The population in a public school was big. There was no much, like the teachers was trained by, let's say, the number, teacher-student ratios. But I still found that some of my teachers in primary school, in that public school, even if I was there for only baby class, nursery, I think nurseries in some places, they call it ECD, then standard one, they still remember our interaction. They really try their best. But then the quality was not as much as being in a private school, where you are only, let's say, 20 kids in a class or 18 kids, and you have a lot of airtime with your teachers. So that was a very good decision she made, because I moved out when I was just starting standard two, and I went to this private school called Mima mm-hmm. Light Academy. But the private school in my village is not the private school we talk about in Nairobi, like the Cambridge and Brookhouse. So this private school was more of a community initiative. So the people who started it were retired teachers from the public school I was just called Kinyoro, which was called Kinyoro Primary School. So this guy started a private school to help students from humble backgrounds like myself mm-hmm. to be able to access private schools at a very affordable cost. Because I remember at some point school fees was only 5,000 to pay. And that time Kibaki had just come into power and public school was free education. So you see, this was it was just like an optimization problem where you pay a little more, but your student is still able to get very good quality education. And, uh-huh. and this guy, being motivated by the fact that he took his children, like the last one was in Kitale Academy, which was it was a public school, but with very private school vibes. So people from Kitale who went to Kitale Academy are just like Busherians. So they're the cool kids of the county. So this school was just to help the community, and it was a very good school. Teachers were really like just from the same community. Some of them were not like TSC trained teachers, but they did a very good job because I did my primary school there, being taken care of by my stepmom, who was a very good mom to my standard eight. I was hoping for very high marks. You know, when you're in standard eight and you're a brilliant kid, now, like you want to get 450, 400, because you just want to pass. And I had done like those mock exams, the exams called Jomaknam, JESMA, JESMA one. Yeah.
Nine.
And there was a JESMA got above 470. And I was like, bruh, I'm going to pass KCSE. KCP. So you just get like very high marks, but I really scored highly in that exam. I worked very hard. I developed my working habits when I was in primary school, and I feel like even as I advanced high in education, I became lazier, because in primary school, at some point in standard seven, I would be given standard eight exams because their math teacher would say that Martin would be your pass mark.
Hey,
so if this standard seven kid gets more mark than you, you're in trouble. And of course, I would do some of them and get an 80 or 70. And you're in standard seven because math is math. If you're good, you're good. You can figure out stuff. So It was just fun. Like primary school was good. I didn't get 400 marks. I was so heartbroken, but then still encouraged myself. I was the best in my school, 398. And my very close friend is called Gideon, was the second, 396. Luckily, we went to the same high school. So I have a story of going to the same high school with people I've been with in previous school. So that was the same high school with Gideon. When I finished high school also in campus, I was there with one of my schoolmates, which is also cool. So it's always nice to like go in, at least you know someone from your previous school. So that was primary. Then went to St. Joseph's Boys High School, Kitale. Which I think is, apart from the ethics I developed in primary school, the hard work, writing summary notes in primary school is very rare, because most people are just drilling kids in primary school, especially private schools. But I went then to St. Joseph's High School, which we always say it's the school that turned boys into men of substance. Because it literally turned you into a man. It was like getting into a furnace. But then I didn't experience much of this furnace, because you know in school you have the wananchi and the wenye nchi. So the prefects are like wenye nchi, then the rest of civilian. The body is wananchi.
Yeah.
So like in high school, When I just joined in Form 1, there was this meeting where Form 1s are like brought together and asked a question. So one of the sisters, I still remember her name, she's called Sister Florence, was like, hey, who will pray for us? And by then I was still having my dreams of being a priest, which is a story we can talk about sometime. Yeah. Just before
how the tables turn.
Yeah. They were like, who will pray for us? And I just raised up my hand. You know, Form 1, like you're coming from primary school, kunayo, you have like that,
kerere.
That appetite. Yeah, kerere, kimbelembele. So I just raised my hand and stood up and prayed like a good Catholic kid, did all the signs of the cross and just prayed to everyone. Then that's where like leadership just starts showing up. So on that day, they also asked, who wants to be like, represent the Form 1s? Like, just to be like a representative. Then I was there again, raising up my hand. But I knew the only way to survive in this school is to become a prefect, because I had known how students who are not prefects are treated in school. And that was just at the time when the corporal punishment was just like the bullying culture, the corporal punishment from other students was declining, but it was still very active and alive. Like, it was still there, like, too bad. People are being
Give us the scene of that, because some of us perhaps didn't experience that. Some of us have probably never seen that. So tell us what that was like.
So you'd have, like, prefects push students. Prefects use their belts to beat students to like, do stuff, do manual work. It's just like slavery, which I'm part of those who regret, because then I was part of the system. I was a student leader in high school when these things happened. And in my prefect's council, because at some point I became the head of the whole prefect council, I tried to deal with these manners. But it was still one way that just used to happen. People being beaten by other students, which is not right at all. And the most interesting case, or the worst case, was being encouraged by the teachers. There's even a time when you need to welcome from once, like the prefect's body needs to welcome from once. And at this point, you'd have like students just go to form once and probably just find a mistake or find anything and just whip form once thoroughly with bells to just give them like orientation to the school. So that the only way to survive in St. Joseph's was to be a prefect, because any other life when you are not a prefect, it was just like tough. But I think that's why one of the things that our principal used to tell us, that this school turns boys into men of substance. It was a furnace where you go in as whatever, boy, and you just come out as very good iron or steel. So
question, so even before you go on, so does that mean for the boys who went to day schools, for the boys who went through quote-unquote soft life of not being beaten and stuff like that, have they turned into men? Are they, what is it like for them? Are they less, are we more macho when we come out to society, those of us who experience some of these things?
I think the beating, it really doesn't add that much value to kids. It's just developed a series of super angry people who, when they come back, they'll still want to proceed with that system. That's why there are people who believe if you don't punish people, if you don't beat people, deliver results, or they won't perform well. But talking about this system that turns boys into men, like, that punishment was not really what the principal intended to mean. But then the prefects would take that as one of the meanings. The teachers would take that as one of the meaning. But then the whole modeling, because I think it was a society that was highly captured on religious principles. There was there was very strict religious practices and timetable. Like, on, you'd go to church every day, and then you'd have like CU guys do their stuff, SDA guys do their stuff, Muslims do their stuff, and Catholic do their stuff, and also make other students do Catholic stuff, which I think should also be changing in most institutions. But the punishment, really, it's just, I don't know, there are people who think it worked for them and it made them better. There are people who, the research doesn't prove that one to be right, because there's a society where we know corporal punishment was banned a long time ago, and they still produce people like men and people of substance. So that punishment doesn't change or doesn't make someone a better man, or I don't know. It doesn't at all. But there are people who associate them becoming better with being punished. It makes sense to be punished by a person who is who has authority, or who is like in charge. Like, a teacher punishing a student that time makes sense than a fellow student punishing you. You see that?
Yeah.
Which was what we prefects would do.
So to date, do you think some of those students are still affected? And for you, does that affect you in your day-to-day life? Are there times you read the news on the headlines? Because it's still a menace in some of the schools that are in Kenya. And so for you, when you see some of those headlines, how is it like for you?
No, I think the people like who are affected up to today, and if you look at social media, like St. Joseph's Boys' Facebook pages, or even former students, people up to today just write about it. People talk about it, about the corporal punishment, because some people still hold that pain. And it's understandable, because if someone probably found you walking to class, and maybe you're even unwell, and started whipping you with a belt on your back, telling you why you're walking instead of running, this person would hold this pain. There are people who can forgive, but then there are people who still have the pain. There are people who are traumatized. Some guys were expelled because maybe of things they probably didn't do, or because of things that that a prefect would just handle and correct to the student. If someone has done something for the first time and is not as grave, it doesn't need to go to the teachers, because the reason why you're a prefect is because you've been given authority. You can be able to sort some of these things without violence. And so when I see such things happen, when I see students being beaten or being bullied, some students are just not bullied by prefects. They were bullied by other students, like senior students. Rugby players were very known for this. Sorry to all the rugby players who are listening. Or like those big Form 4 boys and Form 3 boys who would bully the minors in school. I think most people get traumatized by this. I know like students had stories, students would get raped on media houses. I think it was either Maseno School or something. Like there was a story down in one of the schools where a Form 1 student was molested by senior students. So such things would cause trauma to someone in life. So someone would just hate schools. It even affects them when they're taking their kids to school and so on. So I think, for me, I think it lives in someone. And especially with our system in Kenya, or with our system where we don't do a lot of mental health or awareness, or a lot of dealing with the past to try to move on. We don't deal with some of these things. We don't deal with these past traumas that people went through in those systems. Mm-hmm. It's just like a police officer going to a battle, and then you come back. They need a lot of mental
psychological help. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us, so fast forward, so how did you, after being a prefect and being able to navigate the system and finishing, so what was that, what was life after finishing high school?
No, I always think sometimes I'm lucky, but also I know like most of the times I also put a lot of effort into my dreams and my visions. So I've told you, like, early days in high school, by the late days in primary school, my dream was to priesthood. And I was a choir conductor in high school. I was a head boy. I was there, very active in YCS. There's a day I read the Bible so many times in church. I miss doing that, by the way. I miss it a lot, because the church in England is just very different. And it's kind of, it has very weird vibes. It's too solemn and for my Kenyan energy. So there was that, having a purpose, like having like dreams, or having knowing what I wanted. That was a very important driving force. I didn't know exactly what I wanted, but then I wanted to make a life for myself. One, looking at my origin, I wasn't a kid from like a very rich family who is expecting to, like, after school, I just finished, do any degree in university, and I have a lot of inheritance waiting for me. Yeah. No, I knew I am from a humble background, and for me to make it, I have to make it by myself. And I'd also seen the struggle of my unemployed stepmom, who is taking care of her kids and kids of her husband's other wife. You know, it takes a very good heart to do that. So for her to struggle, she's unemployed, but was able to pay, to continue paying this school fees in private school, or and continue paying school fees for us up to high school. That was a big sacrifice. So I had like a whole purpose to look back to. So I knew I wanted to do well. I knew I wanted to like make it in life and try to make my background better and try to like just make life of those people who come after me just better than that. So even in high school, like apart from student leadership, which I was very active because I also liked outings, I tried not to miss from any outing in high school. So I tried to like balance a lot and really spent so much time working. Mentorship was a thing that helped me a great deal. I always looked up to mentors. In high school, I had mentors. In primary, I had mentors who were my teachers. High school, my teachers, and one specific one called Onacha William. This guy taught me maths. He was crazy. So many people didn't like his style of teaching. It was so funny. I loved it because he was someone who left most of the work to you. And that really nurtured that love for math and that growth. So this guy nurtured my interest in the subject. So I knew I wanted to do something. You know, the way high school when you're smart and everybody wants to do medicine. So that was also one of the dreams. After when the priest dream was fading, you know, it was going down. The more adolescence comes in, the more the dream fades away. You realize, will I make it? Yeah, so I also hoped to get an A in high school. I don't know always what happens to me, because in other exams you get A's, but then in KCSE I got an A minus of 80 points, which to me it was like not good. Looking forward to, I was number 19. So from number 18 to 1, they had gotten A's. So I was just the next one with 80 points. And of course it's because I got a B in English. I've never been a big fan of English, and that's why you can even see right now my command of the language is not that strong. We should do some bit of shared, but I cannot changanya.
My Oxford audience would understand, so we'll keep it here.
Yeah, so there's that 80, which I also found as a similar moment to my primary school, the 398, missing 2 points to get 400. And you see people who get 400 in those days were like the big people of the uni, of the high school. So that's something I wanted to get. I got an A minus of 80 points. And then there's a student I literally used to admire his work ethics and his behavior in high school. He's called Nyanga Levin. So I literally chose my career depending on Nyanga Levin's choice. And I have told him before. So that's how I wanted to be an engineer, but I didn't want to be like a heavy power engineer, like electrical, because I didn't like those heavy equipments and heavy stuff. So I wanted something that is less handy, still engineering, but doesn't deal with big stuff or like so much power, energy, high power. So that's how I opted to select telecommunication engineering. Now, Living selected telecommunication engineering. He went to Multimedia University. So I also selected telecommunication engineering in Multimedia University because I'm trying to fit on the footsteps. I go in uni, and it was lovely. It's like this high school was the best time, but uni also becomes just very good time because it's always nice when you try to balance between school, like schoolwork, but you still have a social life. when you have a social life, then it makes everything just very enjoyable. And when I'm giving you all these cool stories, there have very hard times along the way that we probably would get time to talk about at some point. But I think if I were to calculate an average, I've had very very good flow especially with my academics, which mm-hmm. have been incremental to even my successes after uni. So I started doing telecommunication engineering, and from the word go, when I just got into first year, you see the way people are so considerate and chill, they don't want
complacent.
To say it. Yeah, for me, from first year, I just knew, hey, I'm looking for this first class, and it's just like from now, I'm not even trying to be like one of those guys who are like, nah, I just want to finish uni, and I don't know, I just like from the word go, I'm looking for the first class. And nearly everyone in my class knew that, because it's just like, decide where you want to go and be seen going there. So you just mm-hmm. decide and try to take that route. So you don't play cool or be like one of those guys who would revise at night and then come during the morning when you're getting into the test. They're like, "Ata sijasoma, I've not read." But after the results come out, you're like, "How did you get 70?
Yeah.
And you're saying you did not read." So I like making things quite open, especially relating to my professional and academic life, quite open, because I look at it as a way of also encouraging people who look up to us, and especially when you come from like those humble backgrounds, you have people who are like, if Martin can do this, then I can also do this. So it's always good to like keep encouraging them. So Kwanzaa, since first year, I was just like, we are going for this. Second year was my hardest year in campus, because that was when we are just starting. First year was just a lot of common units, and you just get A's easily. But then second year, it's now we are just getting into engineering. So things were quite tough. And there I got so many B's. And after getting used to engineering, because second year is just like introduction, they try to pop in a few engineering units, mathematics there and stuff. Then third year, you just jump deep into engineering. But then second year, because it was very tough, I think it prepared me well for third year. Third year, I got in so much focused, a lot of group discussions. But the people loved, like, our class. I always say we had like one of the best classes in undergrad, because we literally had class group discussions. See the way, like, after lectures in the evening, you meet as a class and just have like a discussion. A guy goes on board, and of course that guy's one of them is me, because I used to like teaching people. So go on board, get those, because you know lecturers sometimes would just come with handouts and just read, and you don't get, but there's always that one student or two who get the grasp things or take extra time to read. So for me, if I understood something or I went and read like a little extra, I would just call guys to a group discussion. And our class was funny. People would show up. It would just have like 30 guys showing up and seated down there, and myself or any other of the classmates, one of the classmates pick up the marker pen, and we just start discussing, doing those long engineering derivation. So third year, we started this discussion group culture in first year, and it was very tight in our group. Like, that class was very tight with each other. So third year, gotten better with engineering, scooped so many A's and only 2 B's out of 16 units.
When we grow up.
We must count our blessings, man. We must count our blessings. Yeah, so that discussion group and helping others was having a ripple effect on myself. So guys would have, like, the people, everybody was smart, but then the level at which people grasp concepts was different. Because for me, like, units on programming, I wasn't very good on them at them. So I would have to like listen to when go to discussions and listen to guys present about programming. We had people like there's a guy called Jimmy who was just smart. He was just born knowing programming. So why wouldn't you listen to Jimmy? And so we'd go listen to those discussions. Then if the ones I'm good at, I'll just volunteer and lead those discussions, because I knew if I read, then come teach guys or explain to guys, I'm like learning twice. I even know it better. So in the exam pale, you would ace that thing. So fourth year, same thing, same story. So many
questions before you go to fourth year. For you, I've talked to a couple of my friends who've had the same situation where in the internal exam you're doing so well, but when you reach the end, the pot breaks at the doorstep. And so the final exam, which now in Kenya, for example, it's for four, the KCP and KCC are the ones that quote unquote determine what you eventually do. So you'd, as your story, as you've said, in your number one, then at the last minute, the final exam that everyone sees, you don't do as well as you expect. And so for them reaching uni, they decide they won't exert themselves as much, because now their past has shown them that even though they're exerting themselves, they're not doing as well. So they might as well just be complacent in uni as well. So for you, so the question is, for you at first, what gave you that drive to still push on in uni and decide, I actually want a first class, instead of thinking, you know, at a second upper or whatever, nisawa. So what gave you that drive to still push on? And two, what has always been your motivator all along? Because now you've said, in terms of your work ethic and academics, that's one place you don't slack, like you get your stuff correct there. So what has been your motivation all along?
Yeah, so first of all, that's a very big mistake people make when they transfer the primary and secondary school thinking to university. One, primary, you only have one exam in Kenya that determines your fate. Same to secondary school. So you might be getting A's from Form 1 and then eventually get a D in KCSE. No one will ever know that you ever got an A in Form 1. So those, and that's why I think for me, I support a system that will be like of competency based, like where results are incremental. So you have average results as a child grows through school. Because then that limits this pressure towards one exam, that if by chance you go to that exam in the morning and start question one, then by the time you reach question three, you develop a problem, even a medical problem, but you keep writing the exam, you'll fail that paper. Yeah. That's one. So that's something that should not happen. In terms of motivation, or something that that keeps encouraging me, I've told you, the thing is, anytime you're working, there must be an end goal. You must be looking to attain something. Because if you don't have something you're working towards, then you will lack the motivation, because you're literally walking in darkness. You don't know where you're going. So for me, when I get to uni, and this point, at my first days or early days in uni, I asked myself, like, what is just the best that someone could in an academic environment? I just thought I would want to be like the best in this field. And being the best in that field means you are a professor. And if some of my classmates still call me professor up to today. Right now, if they call me professor, I always tell them, hey, don't, because this PhD is not easy. It's hitting me hard. I think those dreams are suspended for a moment until I finish this PhD I'm doing right now. But I had like that push. I was working towards a specific thing, towards being the best in my field. So every time I'm working, even when I'm doing an exam in first year, my mind is on the long-term goal. So once you have long-term and short-term goals, especially if you have the long-term goal, it's easy to set up the short-term goals. Because then if you're looking to be a professor, it means you need to do a master's. And if you want to do a master's in a good university, it means you need a good scholarship. So to get a good scholarship, it means you need very good grades. So you see this, you're thinking backwards. So you know the steps you need to take to be able to get to that long-term goal. So let's say this guy wants to work in a consulting firm, and you're in undergrad. You know, in a consulting firm, these guys only hire second class upper and above. So thinking backwards, you know, I at least the worst I can get, like averagely, I need to get a B to at least get my application accepted in any of these consulting firms in Kenya, which we know they pay well. Of course, you also work too much. So
seems like you have a testimony, but okay.
Yeah, we are going there. So you have your end goal in mind, and they keep motivating you. Number two is, I know when we are choosing undergraduate courses, and this is something I noticed in my time, people do not get enough mentorship and enough guidance on career choices. So guys just go for cool names and big names. Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery. And you see, this is a big title. You got 84 points and you're like, yeah, this is my thing. I'm going to be a doctor. But maybe you're probably just a very good biochemist. You just need to go and do biochemistry and do your stuff. But also, I know there's always a challenge on choosing these courses. It might be your interest, but you know, in Kenya, maybe I may not get a job if I do this course. So also there are other factors that I understand when students are forced to do things that they don't like for the sake of their career future. Because we don't have so many students doing music in graduate and in undergraduate and graduate levels. Yet we know music would probably be some of the best professions to some people. So also choosing the right courses or the right programs is very important in your motivation. Because if you do something you don't like, let's say you choose computer science and you just get in and you realize you hate databases, you hate programming, and you hate networks. So you in summary, you hate computer science. Then you don't even take a step to do a course transfer when you're in first year. And I really respect people who get to university and do course transfers when they realize they don't like that.
Same.
Yeah, it only makes sense to just go to something. Your parents might be like, why are you leaving this competitive course to this shoddy course? Why are you leaving electrical engineering to go and do film and animation? Because sometimes you see in the village, they only know engineers, accountants, and lawyers are probably the only best. And doctors. In fact, every family wants their kid to be a doctor. One of the things I was being told is, why are you doing engineering? We hear people don't get jobs. Why can't you be an accountant? Because every person who is successful in the village is an accountant. So it doesn't make sense to anyone that you're doing engineering. So sometimes it's so nice. I have some friends who, I know one of my friends who was doing mathematics and computer science, left it, went to do film and animation. He's enjoyed the program, was doing a lot of stuff in film and animation. That's a brilliant move. So also doing something that you like has a big effect on the motivation you have towards this vision, towards this goal. So
that actually makes a lot of sense. That makes sense. You to work on Kujiko podcast, because I think it's very noble for you to reach a point and say, for real, this thing is not, we're not moving forward with it, instead of just dragging yourself. Like for me, anyone who can do that is very bold, because again, you're taught that once you start this thing, you have to finish it to please people, or because how society will view you.
Yeah, that's very important. Like if you know there's a way you can go to the path you want and you can pursue that, go to that path. Even if you can't, just try, because it doesn't hurt when you apply to another course and you're already doing this, because you're still, especially for government sponsored students, you're still a job student. So you just do a course transfer. People even do university transfer, I know, for given reasons. Maybe you think you don't work well when you study in course. You probably go to the beach every day, so you try to shift your course and come to study in Embu University, where you at least stay in school and focus. So making those bold decisions to chase your dreams is very important. And so that motivated me. And I got the good grades. I got good grades in fourth year, got good grades in fifth year. Some units I got C in fourth year. And I always say that, this is one of my favorite units. I still got a C. It was a very hard unit called microwaves engineering. Went to fifth year, did project with one of my project buddy, project partner is also one of my, like my best friend. And he was also a very brilliant guy. So it's always nice to work with a brilliant guy. You don't do a lot of work. Yeah. I don't know if he ever knows, but to a big extent, he did a lot of, you know, when you're talking about mentorship or when you're talking about influence, there's the vertical mentorship where like people who are senior than you, your managers, your professors, or even just guys in the industry, your parents, they mentor you, they motivate you to work. So that's like vertical. But then there's peer mentorship. So peer is like your colleagues, people who are at the same grade. You might be in the same class, but this guy, when you just look at their work ethics, you're just like, yes, I just want to. You know, someone is your classmate, but you also want to be like them.
Like, when I grow up.
Yeah. So for me, I was like, I just admired these characters. There's a lady called Bunnies. There's a guy called Brian. There were two Brians. And I literally had to have them in my group, and it's just like, these were like go-getters, would book mentorship sessions in Nairobi. You see these student mentorship sessions, would go to Eventbrite, book events, attend engineering events, go out there, Bunnies, Brian Kemoe and Brian Ombongi, myself, would go out there, attend these sessions, network, the Eventbrite was very effective for us. And let me tell you something, none of these four guys stayed long at home before getting the jobs, because we spent a lot of time, apart from being a normal student, because then they are not abnormal students, apart from being just a student who is working and studying and passing exams, what else? Because out there in the industry, networking is very important. So we did a lot of effort with these guys. These are people I really admired in my class. They were my friend. There were guys like a guy called Daniel. Daniel Wekeso is just a businessman. And he's just a student, but he's also giving us loans. So instead of Fuliza, we had our own student in our class who would just help us. And I think that scheme was very brilliant, innovative idea, and he really helped most of us survive, because then our parents would be like, I will send you money tomorrow, but then tomorrow is like 4 days later, so you need to get something from Dan. We called him Wexula from him to survive for those 2 days. So guys had brilliant ideas, and people are thinking differently, because though these people are thinking of going corporate, there are people who are thinking startups, there are guys who are just doing their own programming work. So like, we would go to networking events with these guys. I'm quoting them because then they also make one of the most important formation in my career, and just mentorship or personal growth. When you go out there in the interview panels, when you talk about these things you did as a student, then someone else just comes with that beautiful transcript with A's, and then they'll ask, so tell us about yourself. And then I was going in the library every day and I got A's. You know, it doesn't make sense. You must be doing something else apart from studying. You must be a law student, but also a podcaster. So
I see. But
yeah, so we had these mentorship sessions, which I think many people, we still get guys who respond to us, text us and tell us about the impact of these sessions. We extended outside campus. We would go, like, go to primary schools around Kajiado County, Rongai area, Ngong area, go to this primary school. We did boy child empowerment. So all these things we are doing, but we are still students in uni.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody is just seated in their room, drinking konyagi, which is fine, by the way, because from time to time I would take sip from my beer bottle, which is when I'm relaxing. I would go to a club on Friday. That's when I, after second year, because when I was in first year, I was underage. Yeah. I would still go and have fun with people. I would still socialize. But then every time, there's that part of the brain, a percentage that always reminds me, what are we doing? It's just like right now. Right now, I'm working on... I'm a PhD student. And every time, you know, when you're doing a PhD, you have a big topic. But when you read, you can just get lost and even forget what you're working on. So every mm-hmm. time you read, I have to ask myself again, why am I doing this? What am I supposed to do? And sometimes I just look back at behind my head and look at that topic of my PhD and then remind myself, this is the topic, so I need to remain here. Huh? I just look at it and remind myself, this is why I'm here. So every time I read, I try to converge things here. So having the dream. So we did mentorship out in Kajiado. We really empowered so many young boys, and we've had very good feedback from their teachers and the community. We even had one day event every year. Last year, it didn't happen because of COVID. It was called Boys Day Out. So in June. So all the boys from Standard 8 and Standard 7 of all the public schools in that Kajiado area would meet, where we'd just have them play games. Then we have a short mentorship session, because we are a religious nation, a short session of them getting the word and mentorship from a preacher. It was really helped by the PCA and Ngong. So we'd have like this session where these boys meet us, talk about the challenges. Some of them are total orphans like myself, and maybe they've given up. Then I tell them, you know, when I was 8 years, I had no parents. And at that point, by the literally when the news of my mother's death was relayed to me in a very, very funny way. Coming to think of it, that's today is when I'm thinking. They just came in primary school in class. Then they're like, Martin, and my small brother is called George. And they just said, I don't know why, this one just came back to me lately and I remembered exactly what they said. Kuna wageni nyumbani. So like they're mm-hmm. visitors at home. Then when we go home, we arrive there, they're like, your mom has passed on.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was 8 years old. You know, 8 years old, when you see your aunties, your everyone, you're just like, oh, visitors are there. I knew she has passed on, but it didn't hit me that hard. And it came to affect me later in campus. So I had my very low moments. I would go to church just at night when the church is dark and just kneel and cry, because I didn't cry when I was supposed to cry. I literally mm-hmm. didn't cry when my mom passed. I just cried like later when I was in campus. So I would take like those moments when it just came back. And I wasn't even like very open talking about this, because it was just traumatizing. Most people in high school never knew I didn't have any of my parents, because I appreciated the fact that my stepmom was always there for me. She came all visiting days. Kuna siku even she came and I wasn't in school. I'd gone to outing and she had brought a lot of meat and my friends ate all the meat. You know, when you deep fry goat meat and you're in high school where you eat githeri.
Yeah.
So these guys ate all my goat meat and I still am mad at them up to today for eating that goat meat.
Asiyekuwepo na lake halipo.
But it was my goat meat. So, I would still, people would talk about their parents, and you see, when guys are talking about those stories, they're never even considerate knowing about everybody's status, because it's high school. They're boys. They're just like, hey, my dad, my mom, or whatever. So for me, I would just also just tell them stories, because it's just traumatizing to just go and start talking about Oh, my mom died and everything. I just tell them stories. And that, I felt like that holding back had a very big impact. I still have a lot of issues up to today, which I have to deal with, because then they're my ghosts. I must like sort them out. I would say them. I wouldn't freely talk about my parents' death because I didn't have any. So people would have like these great stories about their dad. There was a time when I was undergoing a lot of issues in my adolescence. And that time, I just wish, oh my God, I wish I had a dad to talk to. Yeah, I know like there are these male uncles and everything that are there for you. But then you just want a dad. You don't want an uncle. Or you don't want a male teacher. You just want a dad, because everybody is talking about their dad. And that was like, there are still moments like that when I just wish I could just have a dad and tell them, hey, my PhD is just too tough on me. I want to quit. Mm. Or I want to, you know, I want to take a break. And then they tell me, no, Martin, keep it, keep going, keep working. And I'll be like, yes, dad. But then I didn't get that. I didn't get that at any point. So it took me a lot of time to talk freely about those traumas. And very sad, again, we are in a society where, like, at that point, we never went through any counseling. At 8 years old, and my young brother was 6 years old, who I feel has been more affected by this than myself. And I'm always like, if we had gone through good counseling, being told about the loss, because we were kids, we were just supposed to survive. And that's how we were. Yeah, we have this family, we live with stepmom, and she's so good at with us, but we have not solved the big problem. We have not solved the big trauma case. Kids who have lost both their parents, because these are kids who have just grown up with a parent, at least with a mom, because then dad died when we were 2 years old. My brother was only months old. So my sister was a few years old. They didn't deal with these issues. No one ever talked about us. We've never discussed that, like, in session. So no one has asked me before. So how do you feel? How do you feel like when you don't have a mother? Like when we went back to school, things was just supposed to go to normal. You are supposed to work. And I think even at some point we'd be traumatized by other kids when we went to like things like swimming and so on. So when you go shower in the river, because then in the village you used to shower in the river, and you'd have kids make fun of having lost your mom, you don't have any parent. And you see those early days when you lose both parents, you just know you are either going to become a street kid or you're going to be harassed by your stepmom. Another thing why I love my stepmom so much, she never, like, she was so good to us. It's just like blessings, you know. That's why you must keep counting them. And anytime you lose motivation, you have to look back and look at the number of times you've just had like good opportunities. Like, things might not be working. When these guys were in campus and have lost motivation, like, just go back and even think about it. Not many people even made it to campus. So you need to like just find the motivation for yourself. So
I think I love that point, because today earlier I was reading something, and the title was The Psychotherapy of Gratitude. That an experiment was done. I don't know if it's in Oxford, because Oxford does all the experiments, but an experiment was done of the professor took three sets of students. One, he told them to write their gratitudes, so what they're grateful for in the day. The second group told them to write what they were not grateful for during the day, like things that the experience that they didn't like. And the third group are told to do what? To write just anything about their day. So this went on for a couple of days. And in the long run, you'd realize the people who experienced gratitude had a higher, their quality of life improved. So they were happier, less physical illnesses, etc. etc. So I was just agreeing with you that we should look back at what we're grateful for.
That's very important, because sometimes we have the sad things, we have to deal with them, but we need not make them Because if you also dwell on them so much, especially when you can't solve them, then it becomes troubled. So as you try to deal with them, one has to look at the things that have worked, the things that are working for you. So yeah, so those are some of the like background stories that have really been motivating me to push and push harder. Networking and mentorship has really worked, and I think both vertical and horizontal. Like some of the places I went for internship, I was just got recommendation from some of my classmates, like Bernice. Bernice was one of like very industrious ladies in our class, and she's just a go-getter. Like her character just came out as very strong. But then that's why Bernice right now is working for Google. And it only makes sense because she works for Google. She went out on attachments. She did a lot of good jobs. She has like a very good feedback. She's worked in Safaricom before. And still when you go to Safaricom and they're like, you went to school with Bernice? Like, yeah. Because people like having Bernice at the workplace. She's one of those people who'd like have this good ethics. And you see, when such a person is your classmate, you're too proud to listen to her because you're like all jealous, then you lose it. You lose it. You must be ready to listen to such a person because you can learn a lot. The guys we were doing with the Boy Child Empowerment, I found they always had different impact and different values to my life. I don't know how they benefited from me in that. Maybe they can have a podcast session for them, and maybe we can organize a session for all of us and listen. But I feel like that story is a very interesting story. So opportunities. And this is very important, especially for undergraduate students who listen to this. It's very important to get internships and attachments, whether they are paying you or not. Of course, we hope they pay because then you're working. But some companies think they are training you, so you are the one who paid them. Like if I know friends who went to KBC and are paying to be attached.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And even there's this one called Adrian, which is fine because then you get good training. So whichever option. But
so you're paying for the...
I know, but you're also working. So one must be ready to go in there. Like anytime you have holidays, just find something to do. Sitting idle doesn't help because you lose time and you lose on networking. I know it's hard to get those attachments and internships, but people still get them. So one must just go out there and get them. And so I finished uni, then we start job hustling. And now that I've talked about this group of four, I'm going to use the example quickly as I finish this post-uni life, because then after that, it's all fast. And for me, I think things worked out easily. I know it's not always this way because people have very different paths and mine might never be your method. Whatever works, that's very important. So I always tell everyone, you must know your poison. Once you know it, then things will just come in place. So you need to know things that work for you. Maybe someone is not very good at that's a very risky thing. Everyone should just be good at
talking. As we're introverts in an extrovert world, wow.
Yeah, you have to try and network with the fellow introverts. But yeah, you can network with extroverts. But so I leave uni, we start hustling. And at this point, people in our class, so I'll use my undergrad class, people get different opportunities at different times. There are those who got jobs very early. There are those who have not yet got jobs. There are those who got later. And it doesn't matter, by the way. So that's also where you stop comparing yourself with others, because that's another source to getting depressed. Because if you look at my Instagram status and you see me post very beautiful pizza, you don't even know how I got the pizza in the first place.
Martin, peer pressure, guys. Martin, peer pressure for Instagram.
So, we're
enjoying the streets of the UK.
I know. When I use a little filter on my status, someone thinks this guy is really having a lot of money, and they're already in there in my inbox. They're like, dude, can you loan me £100? I'm like, I only have £10 in my account. Yeah, so comparing yourself with others is the first mistake. It's good to learn from others. It's good to learn from other people's experiences. But when you see your classmate right now, like for you, Billy, when you're there, then someone is in your class and he's already working with maybe part of the legal attaches for the Chief Justice. If you start thinking, oh, maybe I should also be a legal attache for the Deputy Chief Justice, if that motivates you to apply, it's fine. But it shouldn't be like, now because I'm not, then I'm not good enough. You see that? Because you'll finish campus and some people get jobs immediately. Others will get before they finish. Like Banis. Banis had a job before we graduated. And she was doing well. She was an engineer in Safaricom.
Or to be Banis.
I know. Like I mentioned her name, and I think if she listens to this podcast, she won't be angry because she's just a good example that needs to be mentioned. So when someone succeeds, or when someone is doing well, or when someone gets an opportunity, when you don't think that maybe I'm not good enough or whatever. I know there's pressure, there's the requirements of life. You need to pay rent in Nairobi, Pale, Rongai. You need to do your upkeep, because also parents, after you finish campus, they'll start looking at you. They're like, hey, your friends have done this. Especially our parents will be like, Did you see person X kids? They build him a new house. And you're like, how is that supposed to motivate me? It's just adding pressure to my pressure. Already unemployment pressure.
Yeah.
I always smile. But yeah, because then parents also have really put a lot of, we shouldn't ever blame them for having high expectation to us. So you must cushion yourself from pressure around you, pressure within the society. When other people will be doing very well, you might be the one who is doing very well. It's fine. If others are doing
like you,
I think
you're the one who is doing very well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I've done well. Like literally, academically and professionally, so far I've done well. The only thing that has become very tough is this stage that I am right now, which I think this is the first place I'm talking about it publicly. Uh-huh. It's tough, yeah. It's tough.
Being you were the first forward to getting there. Now, even as we finish, because our time is running out. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, so it's tough. It's tough being a PhD student. So I get my job like a month or so after my graduation. I went to work in a company called. No, before my graduation, by the way, like it's long. Before my graduation, I just worked in a company where we were doing a lot of fiber. I don't want to mention the name. It's a very good company. I got very good training, but also the work was intensive. Pulling fibers in the manholes, not fun at all. then we helped people in Nairobi set up 4G and fiber in their houses, Safaricom home. So that was beautiful. Then after that, I went to become an intern in Safaricom for 3 months, which I think was also a very career-shaping moment. Applied online, no connections, didn't know anyone, used my previous experiences, talked about my experiences in campus during my interview, and you get in, which was cool, learning opportunities. Of course, everyone wants to at least work in Safaricom or just take a photo in their offices. It's still fine. It's an achievement. It's a good company, by the way, and it's the biggest telco in Kenya. After that, 3 months attachment, for a short while, I went and learned a bit about massaging. We are not talking about that today. it's a very important skill.
Away like, from the priesthood, Kabisa.
Mm-hmm. No, a priest must wash the feet of the congregants.
Using massages, okay.
Yeah, there's the anointing oil. Then we... like that's just my career. Then after that, I went back to MMU and taught diploma students. I taught 2 units in uni. It was a very fun experience. I had one very interesting class and another one very hard to deal with class, but they were still nice kids. So I enjoyed that time. for once, when I was a student, I thought maybe lecturers were just giving soups, but then I also saw it in real life. When I saw a student get one, I tried to see, but then I couldn't help. After that, I worked a bit at Communication Authority of Kenya. Another interesting experience. Every telecom engineer would want to go to Communication Authority of Kenya. It's like that cool place you want to go because it's a very practical environment. It's a parastatal, so the pressure is limited. You only have like specific working hours. It's not like those private organizations where sometimes you work for 17 hours. Yeah, then fast forward. That's when I made the move, which I think is the biggest move of my life, going to applying to PwC and getting in. And that's how I came to know you.
But do you say?
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, so PwC experience, very good learning experience. A lot of exposure, worked with banking sector, telecommunication sector, manufacturing sector. And these things, however small they look, they expand your mind. So exposure is very important. These experiences you have in the past, I'm sure anytime you go to an interview, Billy, if you're trying to do an interview, when you talk to someone about your podcast and you start discussing about issues you discussed with your podcast, you will get stories to talk about in an interview compared to that person who just does nothing else apart from being a student and going to rev every night, which is fine, by the way, because I did.
Martin is lying you, which is fine, but he did do all that. You've had Martin used to exert himself. So as you rave, exert yourself as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's very important. It's very important. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I used to go to Club Legend in Rongai and Bailey's. There's one, I don't even remember the names, but I remembered that I need to still do my community service and still go to church, sing in choir.
And still get your first class.
Get my first class. Oh, by then, my dream was not even passing exams. It was just very specific. First class honors. That was it. Yeah, that was it. I got names like Prof. Others called me Moving Library, which are cool things. They add you to your pressure of passing. Yeah, and then I was in PwC for 1 year, 5 months. I love the exposure. I love the lessons learned in that company. I think they're very, like, invaluable. I think it's priceless. Of course, there's the pressure of work, which is, I tell you, like, in any person who's been in a consulting company would know. So when you're there, when you go there, you must be ready to have,
to like, work
during busy season. Busy season kicks your head. You get to work. Then there's a slack season where you can enjoy. For once, I could afford a trip to Kilifi and just stay in a beach. Yeah.
Hey.
After 4 years of
everyone's dream.
I know. Take those photos in the ocean. Yeah, but I think my experience in PwC was invaluable, and it's still very invaluable right now in my conversations, in my work, in my work behaviors, even when I'm writing stuff, some of the methods I learned there. Yeah, so worked there for 1 year, 5 months, and I was like, no, this is not my thing. I need to go back to school. And I applied for the Rhodes Scholarship. The Rhodes Scholarship takes students in Kenya. So I applied for the Rhodes Scholarship. I didn't know about Rhodes Scholarship before I applied it. So I just saw a link on WhatsApp and I was like, oh, this thing is free to apply. You know, the way we don't like paying applications.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I can do this. Let me try this thing out. So I apply for it. For once, it's one of the only few scholarships that I applied to the end, because zingine, I just used to start and then at some point I'm just like, tired. I just stop. Or when I get to pay application fee, that's why I was just like, yeah, cancelled. But Rhodes, I applied to the end. Got my 5 referees. Importance of networking. I didn't struggle getting my 5 referees. I just called my 5 university professors and just told them, hey, Dr. Otanga, hey, Professor Konditi, hey, Dr. Otieno, hey, Dr. Virginia Onyara, hey, JT, would you write me a recommendation? And they didn't need to ask a lot because they know me. I was their student. I sat in their classes. I asked them questions. After class, I went there and just had stories with these professors. Other students might hate you, might look at you and think you're trying to be a favorite of your professors or anything. But it's very important for
you. But look where you are now.
Yeah.
But look where you are now.
Yeah.
In the Oxford University.
Yeah, so you must form those connections. Your professors are very like instrumental to your current to your future. So these are people who will call their former student and tell them, "Hey, I have this student who's so hardworking and he doesn't have a job. So do you want this guy? He also has podcast about Busherians."
It's not about Busherians.
No. I'm just hating on Busherians. Because it was one of my dreams to be a Busherian.
But now you're on the podcast. I mean,
yeah. So I feel bushy for at least. Yeah, so those professors are very, like, just go see your professor. Just make personal connections. These are people who will help you. Guys will tell you when you're not doing right. The guy will tell you, hey, I marked your paper, but I think you're not answering well, or you're not doing exams well. Your cuts, because exams, they don't know you, and they only have admission numbers.
Yeah. So
those networks help. They wrote for me recommendation. I went to the Rhodes interview. Trust me, in the Rhodes interview, talking about academics was only about 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time was about what else? We talked about boy child mentorship. We talked about my experience in the choir and singing Luya folk songs when I was in Multimedia University. We talked about my leadership as an academic secretary and different leadership positions I've held. We talked about my experiences in work and IEEE. There's the IEEE where I was very active. I joined a professional body as a student. Always join. If LSK has student memberships, why not become a mm-hmm. member and be active? Being a member is one thing. Being active is another thing. When you attend those things, being active is important. You can attend all of them and at the end of the day be like you never attended any, because then you didn't get any contacts and so on. I even made a business card. Uscheze by then, I was student.
Hey. So
uh-huh. A business card without a business. So uh-huh. The interview was really more of your holistic person. Yes, they want people who are smart, who passed their undergrad, which I think by the time you decide to apply, most likely all of you did well, got the second class and above. So it's really nothing unique you're coming to tell them.
Yeah.
So we went ahead and discussed about those critical issues. We discuss about issues to do with about employment. We discuss about issues to deal about, like, just emergent issues in the society. What are you trying to do to correct these things? Because you're not just going there to complain. You must be taking actions. You must be educating the public. Like right now, I think like this podcast could go a long way in helping dealing with the issue of the bullying in high schools, like where prefects have so much power. Prefects are very important, and it's also a very good stage, the leadership you learn while you lead others in high school. But then there's need to like educate and make an environment where student and student leaders are like their friends. In most schools, they were enemies, which wasn't the best thing. So have something else to talk about when you are out there hunting for opportunities. But also for others, I can't talk about for them, the people who go the startup life, the innovators, the guys who start their own businesses. And there's another group that we cannot avoid mentioning, the group that were just born rich. It's not wrong to be born rich, by the way, just because if your father is leaving you 100 million in the account, that's fine. Start there. Build yourself something. Go ahead. Because, you know, the people who hate on kids who have just found themselves that their parents... Because you might work hard today, Billy, and after a few years, in your podcast, you're advertising Microsoft data centers in Nairobi and Kansas City. And
from your mouth to God's ears, your Munga is clear.
Yeah,
that's what God has heard.
That's fine. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you can't blame someone for working hard. Yeah. I know, like, there are ethics, people need to do good for the society, but we can't really blame Elon Musk for being Elon Musk. Of course, there are things he does that we are like, no. But still, these are people who have really worked hard. These are people who came up with innovation. Someone stayed in Harvard, came up with Facebook, and that's it. We must always appreciate them. Of course, they have responsibilities as well. So, same thing. If you're coming from a well-to-do family, then you have a role of doing better and even making the society better. Like, you have a bigger responsibility to help the society become better. Because if the more we have more people grow, we have, even in business, we'll have a better purchasing power. Yeah? Same thing. Those who are coming from, like, humble backgrounds, like myself, you have a responsibility. You can't keep saying you're from a humble background. In future, you have to keep saying you're from a humble background, but then everybody who is coming ahead of you should be from a better background. If your father owned a great wall, I always love that example. You need to own at least a colored TV, and your kid probably needs to own a flat screen. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, if my father owned a great wall, which we did have one, and we used to watch WWE on a great wall, small TV. I want to own an OLED, like big screen, very big, because I also love watching for you. Because there's no victory in suffering. I'm not a big believer of suffering. As much as sometimes we suffer to get things, I don't think... There are people who think, like, we must suffer to get... Because I walked barefoot 30 kilometers and I have money to buy my kids' shoes. I still don't buy them because I think walking barefoot. Suffer. Yeah. No, we don't want to believe in suffering. It's part of life, but it doesn't have to be the only way. You can have it easy by then.
So after the Rhodes Scholarship, after getting the scholarship, I think now that I've had two guests who've had this scholarship, Rhodes, tafadhali, if you're listening to this, your next applicant.
Are you trying to campaign for yourself?
I mean, I'm not trust saying me,
you'd
that.
Be a,
but...
You'd be a big plus to Oxford. I think Oxford needs you more than you need them. I feel like this place is just like a place where it taps on the great men of this planet. So it literally needs you more. Like, you're what Oxford is, really. Mm-hmm. A student who's successfully doing podcasts. I tried to start. I tell you, it's not easy. Like, I did 3 episodes and I'm there. Retired. I'm a retired podcaster. Yeah, so you just set the ambition. I know Oxford was never part one of my dreams. I've always dreamed to go to 2 unis for postgrad. I always wanted to go to either Stanford or Imperial College London. Those are like my dream unis for postgrad. But then this opportunity came, and who wouldn't want to go to the best uni in the world? Like, you don't say
you call it the best now that you're there, but
no, it is okay. Like ranking wise, it is number one. Like, yeah.
Your Rhodes scholarship. I know people.
Yeah. No, you just gotta keep there. You scoop your second up or first. You're a first guy, you know.
Pressure. Yeah. But okay.
Professor Githu Muigai. Yeah. As long as if he's listening to this podcast, we won't be able to get A's in common law. But as long as you go to his... He has a very interesting school of thought in law, which I think if I was ever a lawyer, I would be on the opposite side. I would be on the William Junger side.
You're coming soon.
So, so you get those A's, get A's from those great guys. But you see, and the more, if you're just driven by by dreams. It's not so hard working on the S. But you see, if someone doesn't have a dream and you're just reading too hard, you don't have any motivation that makes the reading fun. Because studying has to be fun.
Yeah.
To some extent, of course, I know it's hard. I even find it hard to study it or to focus. But then there should be like something that makes you, you know, every time you remember you want to just walk shirtless in a yacht in Dubai for 1 week every year,
uh-huh.
3 weeks every year, you know, you just open a textbook and read.
And you say,
yeah. Anytime you remember you want to build schools back in Kisii County, you just open your book and read, because the community is central to what you're doing. So like, there must be something that is making you do whatever you're doing. But if you're just in that degree or in that school, if high schoolers are listening because your parents are paying, then my friend, your life, that's why your life is hard. That's why your school life is boring. You're drinking 24/7 because you just have no purpose. Purpose is very important.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps you in shape. It's like that thing that slaps you when you try to shake to the other side. Pop, pop, returns you. The purpose gives you. I don't know if it's purpose or purpose.
You're done in Oxford. You should tell us. But even as you wind up, tell us a bit about the life in Oxford and your PhD and what you'd tell the listeners who...
So,
and now looking up to you.
Mm-hmm. Oxford is lovely. Of course, there's other issues that you deal with in a foreign country, which is normal, I think, being in a country where you're a minority and so on. But one thing, I would say I loved this city. The moment I just set my foot here and opened my eyes, because I came while sleeping in the car from London to Oxford. Mm-hmm. But when I opened my eyes and I just saw it, that's the day I fell in love with the city. I knew the school was going to be tough, the academics, because then you are walking on the footsteps of Robert Hooke, for Hooke's law in physics, Form 2. You're walking on the of Boyle. You remember Boyle's law in chemistry? Gas laws?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking on their footsteps. It can't be easy. You're walking on Roger Penrose, the Nobel Prize winner in physics. It can't be easy, but you have like the most beautiful medieval architecture, and it's so nice. It's so beautiful to be here. Even when you're just stressed, you can just get out there and just walk and just look at the beautiful work those architects did in like over 1,000 years ago. If you're, for example, from colleges like Balliol or whatever. So I love the environment. I also think like there's a lot to learn and a lot to exchange, especially when you're coming from our background or our home. And this is where I agree a lot with PLO Lumumba, political hygiene. So if you're coming from a place where systems don't work, and trust me, people in Oxford think also their government doesn't work. And I'm always like, ooh, you should come to Kitale. You'll appreciate this place like 1,000 times. And that's all about human needs and Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So the more you have, of course, the more you need, and your needs until you get to self-satisfaction. So I think when systems work, you, trust me, the place is so nice, so beautiful. The parks, there are so many parks, like parks where you can just go and relax and just breathe fresh air. No cars, no noise, just people and children singing. Just nice places to sit. We need more parks in Kitale. There's also the social life, our college. So graduate students in Oxford, there is undergrads. They have their social rooms. They're called junior common rooms, JCRs. Then graduate, that is masters and PhDs, and some postdocs join it. They have their common room. It's called middle common rooms. Those are for graduates. Like in my college, which is Oriel College, we have the middle common room, where we go there and just have chat. That's a place where you get to meet graduates from other departments, from philosophy, from political science, from medicine, and like very interesting things. You just get to listen to what people are doing. You get to listen to physicists who are like one of the hardest group to listen to. You get to listen to law students. You also get to just sit at the bar counter and enjoy a sip of cold beer with ice cubes in cocktails. So it's just like a whole round life. But then the pressure here, sometimes it takes a toll on you. There's so much pressure here. The students from different backgrounds deal with different issues. The passive aggression, you get to start talking about topics that maybe were unpopular. In Kenya, we don't talk about racism because then it's not an issue. Our issue in Kenya is tribalism. But then when you come here, you have to talk about it. Even if you've, some people have not experienced, others have experienced, but these are topics you have to talk about, or you have to like be a part of the discussions you have to be a part of. And one thing I love about this environment or this society is people talk about the issues, like people talk about the problems. So you go and have discussions of on these issues, on these matters. And I've really grown, because for me, I was like, at first when I came here, I was like, I know, these are things like, I don't think, I'm just here to study. I don't mind if that happens, as long as it doesn't happen to me. But then you realize you're part of the society. Mm-hmm. And when you come to this community, you have to understand, you have to talk about the issues, and you have to so socially, lovely. Architecture and beauty wise, lovely. Systems work. One of the things I really wish we could have in back home. Because still, if I were to choose home or here, I would still choose home. But then people get absorbed in these societies, because you're in a society where systems are working in terms of like social welfare, health, healthcare, and such things. So our society has a lot to do, which I think there's been a bit of progress. We are seeing a lot of progress in terms of justice, in terms of healthcare, but then a lot needs to be done for systems to work. When systems work, there's a lot of opportunity for people to think about other things, to innovate, to just do things, to just be out there and just do other stuff. Because as we have to keep crying about employment, about infrastructure, we don't even have good roads yet, leave alone tarmac, Maram roads to my village. If you don't have a four-wheel drive and it's muddy, you might never get to my home, Billy. After this podcast, you should buy a four-wheel drive if you want to ever visit my family.
coming soon, of which you guys have gone abroad. I like how you guys have that perspective. So definitely, I hope this is not a case of brain drain. I hope you're planning to come back home soon.
That topic of brain drain, I think we should discuss one day. You know, also people work where there's appreciation for working. And this is something that many people just don't talk about, but it's true. You know,
you'll come back to this podcast and because I know that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
I know that's a whole other topic, but thank you so much for coming to the podcast. I hope the listeners enjoy listening, and they can tell us what their thoughts are on all the things we've talked about, because we've talked about probably your whole life history. If God forbid something happened to you, this is the podcast that will be displayed. So help the listeners tweet at the Busharian Pod on Twitter and tag us at The Good, The Bad, and The Busharian on Instagram, and tell us what are their thoughts on some of the things we have discussed. Also, not forgetting they should get their merchandise that is coming out. So from hoodies to shirts. Martin, the next time we're recording a podcast, you should have your merchandise.
Yeah, you should post them to Oxford.
Exactly. Now that it's even winter is coming, you should be ready for that. Yes. Have a lovely week ahead, guys, and cheers.